God has been so wild lately. He doesn't seem to listen. He doesn't obey my commands, and we can't even bribe him with treats.
He's gotten so out of hand, he may even have to be put down.
God is not the problem here. The problem is the people who want to be the leader of the pack. We reintroduce God. We retrain people. You're listening to The God Whisperers. Starts to sound the same after a while, too.
In a very good way.
This one's called Prepare for Takeoff.
I don't know.
Sort of an aeronautical theme.
You're listening to the world-famous gospel. I'm Craig DeLofrio.
I'm Bill Swerla.
Yeah. We'll just
turn that up a little bit.
Yeah, where it takes off.
The guitar work is stellar in these things.
It reminds me of the old Starsky and Hutch.
Yes.
You know, intros and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't speak all of a sudden.
It's funkadelic.
I just see Huggy Bear, you know, hanging out in the bar or whatever.
How are you, Craig?
Pretty good. How you doing, Bill?
We're back at it.
Another face-to-face episode.
This is getting almost old at this point.
Yeah.
We'll be fighting pretty soon.
Yeah, pretty soon. We'll be at each other.
So you're in the throes of your stump tour.
Yeah, we're out stumping.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We stump.
Stumping the LCMS for money.
Hey, a good ordination sermon recently. Not bad.
Really? You heard one?
Yeah, from you.
Oh, me.
Are you senile? Is that? Oh, yeah.
When was that?
Well, let's see. I don't know.
Man, it's a distant memory now. Whose ordination was it?
Just yesterday. It was Darren Sheik.
Darren. Yeah, yeah, good man. Good man.
Down at Faith
Lutheran. Do we know him?
Capistrano Beach. Now Pastor Sheik.
Pastor Sheik. I like that. I like that name, Pastor Sheik.
Yeah, Darren, you know, it's kind of my fault that he's a pastor now.
I warned him not to do it.
Yeah.
Even in the sermon, I said, don't do it. You can stop. You can bail right now.
I met him about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And we met for lunch, rainy day, and we're talking. He had been a seminarian at Talbot for a while.
At Talbot.
And I said, I got to introduce you to some people up at Irvine. So I took him up there. And Steve Mueller. And a couple of the other guys were there.
Whose name you can't remember now.
Yeah, I can't remember who else was there. But anyway, I walked him in and introduced him around. They told him about the program that they have there. And they kind of set the hook and everything.
So nice.
Darren says it's my fault.
And, yeah, well, you got to blame somebody.
You did warn him. I mean, he could have gotten up and run out.
Yeah, and I would have been prepared for that. It's like, good for you. Good. Go. Run.
I would love to see an ordination where that happens.
Yeah.
It's like a moment of clarity comes and the guy says, oh, heck no. I'm out of here.
Every once in a while you're at a wedding, you know, and you have these couples that are, you know, you're thinking this may or may not work.
Right.
And so like I was giving like an out, you know, it's not too late. You know, you can bail right now. You know, and I would pay like cash money for one of these couples just to kind of bail out the door, you know, just to watch the mother of the bride faint. It'd be awesome. That'd keep me going for another 10 years.
We're in hock up to our eyes so you can have your princess day. And then
boom, he's out. Yeah. He's gone.
I'd like to see that.
That's right.
That'd be good.
The best man and the groom and the maid of honor vamoose to Vegas in the rented limo.
That would be
they'd be talking about that one for a long time. So yeah, hey, well
yeah. 626-593-7713, the God Whisperers hotline.
Mm-hmm.
Throw that out there.
Godwhispers.org, the mothership, the full archive, all episodes. Listen at your own risk.
So we're talking about science today.
Oh, science.
Science.
It's poetry in motion. She turned her tender eyes to me as deep as any ocean.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
As sweet as any harmony. Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science. And failed me in biology.
All right.
Shatner was Shatner one of the rules, greatest man. Vocalists That's, of the 80s.
A true beat poet at heart. He was ahead of the curve in rap and hip hop. Let's face it.
Absolutely.
Science.
But most people didn't know that he did new wave music like that though in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Or Thomas Dolby did.
You know, he was serious too. They said when he did Rocket Man on Johnny Carson, he was being serious.
That's
and everybody
amazing.
Was laughing. At
that's
it.
Awesome.
But see, that's the thing about Shatner is that he's seriously funny.
Well, it's kind of he's a true artiste in the vein of Mrs. Miller.
Yeah, that's right. That kind of warp genius. And inevitable. If I pronounce that word correctly,
I'll go with it.
Yeah.
I don't even know what word you're trying to say, but I'll
so
I'll
yeah. So science. This is my hobby
You've
horse
got a
for
hobby
2016,
horse now, and
along with artisanal breads and various other culinary delights.
In college, I had a biology class where the professor was very active in Orange County Republican politics.
There you go.
And when the labs came around, he'd come over and talk to me about politics for the hour or two.
Oh.
And I got about half of my labs done. because at the end of the class, he said, "This is my fault," because I'd come over and we'd just talk.
Well, you have a knack for that.
And so he said, "You're not going into any profession with the sciences, right?" And I said, "No,
nope.
Business."
And give you an A.
He said, "I'll give you a decent grade in the labs because it was my fault, as long as you don't go become a doctor or something."
Yeah,
like
right.
That.
Yeah, he doesn't want that blood on his hands.
So this is pretty much my extent. I had physics for dummies, kind of business major physics, and I think pretty much what we did there was go drop things off a roof, that sort of thing. But, you know, this was like, so I claim no scientific expertise in the least. I do like to take pills.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Better
living through chemistry, baby.
And Paula believes that I could have been a pharmacist as far as knowing what pill does what.
Dude,
I grew up in
I've
a doctor's
I've seen
house
your combined pill collection in your kitchen, and you could open a pharmacy.
This is true.
You guys pop more pills than you know, people on the west side of L.A.
Paula will tell you that I have a very wide knowledge of pharmaceuticals.
Well, your brother, wasn't he in the industry?
Both my brothers. And
I'm not making the little
quote industry, the true biotech pharma industries. You know, and I grew up in a doctor's house, and my dad had a drug closet at home. So whatever you needed, we pretty much had.
Ah, yeah.
And one time I had a skin infection. He said, "Go take Vantin." I was probably about 14 years old. Go take two Vantin and then one and so forth. It's an antibiotic. And I got to the closet, couldn't remember what he said. It started with a V, so I took Vicodin.
Nice. Yes,
and,
right. There you
I
go.
Felt really good.
That started you on a really bad road.
Bad trajectory.
Yeah, that was.
But anyway.
After rehab, I came back.
This is my disclaimer in that I have no scientific expertise, whereas you, on the other hand, are a
failed PhD.
Are a certified chemist guy.
Yeah.
You must have some certification.
I had a great, I have a master's,
well,
which is
a
failed PhD. I had a great chemistry teacher in high school. My two favorite teachers in high school were Mr. Petrovich in chemistry, and what a great name, Igor Petrovich.
That's a good name.
A truly great guy. And Mr. Merwick, John Merwick for calculus, AP calculus. Those were excellent.
transformative.
Very much so. I mean, they were the kind of teachers that really deserved that, you know, these Teacher of the Year kind of awards, and just for not only teaching the subject well, but stimulating interest, curiosity, humorous. I mean, they were devoted. They really wanted you to learn and love this stuff.
I had a principal that was very transformative. He told me that I would never accomplish anything, and I've set that as a life goal. that's been my life goal.
You have his picture on the wall.
Yes.
I'm living the dream. Yeah. But, I bailed on a PhD and then worked for a bunch of years in chemistry in the industrial setting for Bio-Rad Laboratories. Now, that was fun. I was kind of like the pet chemist when, you know, you had a chemistry problem, you came to me. And then I went to a seminary, so, you know, studied theology and never did a doctorate in that. I don't do footnotes, you know, so doctorates elude me at some point. But I have these, it's like two sides of my brain. I've got this theology side and the science side, and they don't always get along.
It actually...
There's like this wild conversation that goes on inside my head.
It comes together in a medieval kind of way in that... Theology used to be called the queen of science.
It was.
So it actually comes together.
Yeah. No, there was a time in when you look at the classical university or the university as it emerged in the Renaissance, the Reformation, the three great professional schools were theology, law, and medicine.
Yeah.
And so everybody kind of studied this classical thing, and then they went on to theology, law, or medicine. And so those were the three great disciplines, and theology was considered the queen of the sciences. But you have to kind of take note that that was a time when chemistry was alchemy, you know, and astronomy was astrology. And they honestly thought, and it's not just in the Confessions and Luther, but they honestly thought that garlic juice demagnetized iron. You can trace this. This goes way back. This is a commonplace.
Was it just that garlic juice and iron was not available at the same time in the same place very often?
I have no idea, but it's quoted over and over and over again.
Because I mentioned on this program several times that I've smeared garlic juice on refrigerator magnets.
It smelled nice. It smelled like a marinara sauce.
I'd lick the refrigerator later.
Little household hint. You don't need to buy one of those stainless steel hockey pucks to clean your hands of onion, fish, and garlic smell. Just rub your hand with one of your stainless steel pieces of flatware, like a spoon, and it'll do the same thing.
I just rub it in my hair. It makes a nice tonic.
No, I'm talking about taking the smell out, not distributing the smell all over your body.
Yeah,
okay, that's different. But, you know...
Actually, olive oil is the amazing fix-all for every... You can lubricate your car engine with it. You can use it as a hand lotion. And of course, it cooks.
So the scientific thing, you know, science is not real; doesn't really come into existence, really, until Copernicus. Though it has its roots in Aristotle and that, but it's not until Copernicus, which means the church has nothing to say about science, until Copernicus dared to say that the Earth wasn't fixed, and that it was the Earth that moved around the sun, not vice versa.
Now, doesn't that kind of contradict the Word of God?
Well, it depends how you read it. And that's always the case. It depends how Luther thought so. I mean, it's kind of a throw off in a table talk, but Luther really wanted nothing to do with Copernicus. But Melanchthon was cool with it. He was fine. And they had a Copernican astronomer at Wittenberg.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and he did a sabbatical with Copernicus. They gave him a couple of years to go and study with Copernicus. But that was revolutionary at the time.
Yeah.
I think there are three revolutionary... Most science is pretty benign when it comes to theology. People, you know, the church doesn't much care. And like you say, you derive a lot of benefits from all the medicines and pills that you're popping. Countless pills.
I don't know of any pills in the Bible, by the way.
They did practice forms of herbal medicine, though, especially for fertility. You'll see that. Yeah. But Copernicus was the real first challenge because it challenges the idea that the universe is Earth-centered, that the Earth is the center of the cosmos. It kind of is theologically, but it is not cosmologically. The second challenge was Darwin in the 19th century, and that was his rather radical but not original proposal that diversity of life came from common ancestry. Okay, so that's evolution and Darwin. And then the third is more in our era, and that is Big Bang cosmology.
What's the origins of the Big Bang? Who came up with
the priest, the Belgian priest slash physicist?
Really, a priest?
You'd be amazed in the modern era how many theologian scientists there are. One of the most notable and a really good read is John Polkinghorne. He was a physicist and was then ordained as an Anglican priest later in his life.
Huh.
And so, but he's a published physicist. He's a PhD published researching physicist who then also became an Anglican priest. Yeah, it tells you a couple of things. One is science and faith are not incompatible. There are a lot of people like this.
Well, there are a lot of PhD physicists roaming around today who are either Christians or at least believe in God.
Right.
So there's a lot of that.
I think it was Nathan Jastrom who said, if you're looking for atheists, don't bother looking in the physics department. Go to the philosophy department. There are plenty of them over there.
Yeah, because they're too smart for that.
Or, another notable who is Francis Collins. He's the director of NIH, the former director of the Human Genome Project, a biologist, geneticist, MD, PhD, who came to the Christian faith after he got his MD and his PhD.
Huh.
He was raised by basically agnostic hippies, he says. And Fritz Schaefer, Henry Schaefer, who's a chemistry professor. I forgot where he is now, but he was on faculty at Berkeley about the time I was there at Cal Berkeley. And he's a very, very articulate, outspoken Christian, and yet practicing science. These are not incompatible necessarily, although when you look at popular media or you look at Facebook or you look at some of the debates, the Ken Ham, Bill Nye debates, you would think that you have to choose one way or the other. You can either be a scientist or you can be a believer, but you can't be both. I think what troubles people is that in the laboratory, you are agnostic. In the laboratory, you are religiously agnostic, so that a Jew, a Muslim, a Christian, it doesn't matter who's observing the data and interpreting it. God is not a scientific principle, and so in the realm of science, you are agnostic. So
well,
I
think that probably makes for good science all the way around. Is to come in as much of a blank slate as you can be to let the data speak for itself,
as objective as any human being can be. Also, you don't pray over your experiments because if
you
had a miracle,
you weren't in my biology class. I was way behind on all those labs.
Did it work?
No. Well, it did kind of. I got a passing grade.
That's because you were schmoozing
and
politics.
It was by grace. It wasn't by works.
Yeah.
So it was good.
But you wouldn't pray for a miracle because that would not be scientifically valid.
That wouldn't
advance anything. I like to say that in the lab, I was a chemist who happened to be a Christian. And in church, I was a Christian who happened to be a chemist. So, my chemistry is irrelevant in church as my Christianity was in the lab. It's not relevant, except perhaps to guide ethics, morality. And I think that's an important feature of this and why we shouldn't be chasing our young people away from science creating a boogeyman.
You never looked at the candles burning in church and thought what reactions are going on there as the wax is.
Nor did I try to scientifically understand how bread could be the body of Christ either. That's kind of beyond scientific scrutiny.
So candles are beyond scientific scrutiny?
The fake ones are, yes. Yes.
Okay.
But is that counting up or down?
That's counting up.
Oh, okay. Well, we have a new high-tech timer.
Yeah, it's my cell
phone. I'm not used to seeing you in person in a vivid, I must say vivid, Hawaiian shirt.
It's stunning, isn't it?
It is. I almost need to wear sunglasses or tone down the lights. But which I guess kind of leads me to why am I doing this? Because it does take, I'm reading kind of outside, I'm reading off the reservation.
Well, I think that it's interesting how our pasts actually inform our interests here. I have a strong interest in Luther's two kingdom principles. And that's
from your political days.
Political background.
Yeah.
You bring your science with you into your world of experience.
I think that's a great point, too, because there's a lot to say about the intersection between the temporal and eternal kingdoms, mm-hmm. or church and state, these two ordos, and their distinction, but not separation.
Right.
There are Christians who are participants in the political arena.
Yeah.
And you would say the same thing I would. Woe to us if there are no Christians in the
politics,
political order.
Right. But woe to us also if people are elected just because they happen to believe in Jesus.
You know, I think, amen. I think we may have hit on an interesting analogy, and we didn't even plan on this. Here's what it is that just as your Christianity is important to your politics, it doesn't govern your politics.
Interesting.
You know, and so Christianity can't govern science because God doesn't reveal science. He reveals himself,
right.
You know. However, Christianity will provide a moral framework for political life, right? Mm-hmm. And Christianity provides a moral, ethical basis for the investigation of creation.
Interesting.
That actually might work. I'm gonna have to think about that. But I think that's kind of one of the primary reasons, besides my own. The two parts of my past is that I'm really afraid that a lot of bright young people are being led to think that, you know, they either can't go into certain sciences like biology or astrophysics because they'll have to pretend the Earth is really old, or they'll have to deny evolutionary theory, or somehow they'll fall from the faith. You know, like the minute you read a biology textbook, faith will evaporate.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
which you know, this is really bad. If we chase our young people out of biology, we're going to keep them out of medical school. We keep them out of medical school, we're going to have unbelieving doctors, and there are plenty of those around already.
And that comes into the ethics and everything as to how you're treated. But I have to say, in my evangelical past, I had a hard time in certain science classes and that sort of thing because I was in a crisis of faith moment here where I had to either affirm the Bible or affirm the data before me, especially when it comes to biology and when the topic of evolution, that sort of thing comes up. There was a struggle there. And being not a thinking Christian but an emoting Christian at that point, I was unprepared on how to deal with that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because of my choice of going into chemistry because of Mr. Petrovich, I never really had to engage evolutionary theory because that's in the biological sciences. And no chemist says that the periodic table evolved. we were more inclined to say that all these elements came to be basically through, you know, fusion. Atomic fusion that goes on in the sun. You can observe the process all the time. So this is not like a huge mystery here.
Right.
But it's
kind of, I would imagine, in chemistry, you're just dealing with the stuff that's laying around already.
The big question in chemistry is, what can this stuff do?
Not where did it come from.
Right. We didn't ask those questions. We didn't have time. You know, when we had free time, we played ping pong. But that was chemists. It's only in hindsight that I'm looking back and asking myself, how did I reason as both a believing Christian and a scientist at the same time, and interact with people who are not Christians in the laboratory? I mean, we got along famously. We had good evangelistic discussions across the lab bench, but we were not invoking God or the Bible as a scientific principle. That would have been way out of line.
Right.
See, and I think that's kind of where it's sort of going, is how do you keep these two thought balls juggling at the same time? The faith part, the revealed part, the knowledge God reveals to us, and the stuff that we discover through our reason and our senses.
You have been a little bit of a lightning rod, Lisa, recently, Christian News and other places.
Recently,
and the National Enquirer.
That's because of my footprint. I have too big. I gotta restrict my footprint.
But I think that what you've been trying to say is interesting in a lot of ways, and I don't think that I comprehend a lot of it because I have a very different past. But I think a lot of what you're getting at is that science is important, and it's not in opposition to Christianity. Yet too many people are willing to ignore the scientific data and impose the Bible on science instead of dealing in two realms.
Two realms. Again, I think our two kingdoms analogy may actually kind of work here.
Yeah.
The realms are first and third article, really. Science is a gift from God. It's our reason and our senses at work. Faith is a gift from God. That's a gift by the Holy Spirit working through the Word in the third article. Those two are not in competition with each other. Those are the temporal and eternal aspects of our existence. And if we make them compete, we're basically like denying the very thing that we confess in the first article. If we say science is bad, you know, and all this, we're basically denying a first article gift. And you yourself, with your plethora of pills, testify to how much good it can do.
Look, as
you're
as
living proof.
As far as I'm concerned, it's still alchemy. It's all magic to me. I mean,
it's not alchemy.
You know what else is magic? Is electronics. You know, the smoke gets out, the magic goes away. That's all that I know.
Yes, but electrons,
you know,
going at the
works,
speed of light.
I don't know. But anyway, so the controversy seems to be going around a lot based on the origins of the species, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where do you think that we go wrong as the LCMS on this? You know, as a whole, where are we missing the boat? Is it that are we operating in the garlic juice and magnets world too much?
You know, that's a good question. I think in a sense we are. But I would say if you want to go back to that era, take a chill pill, one of your pills, and hang with Melanchthon. I know he's kind of like a shadowy figure sometimes, apart from Luther, but I think Melanchthon, as a Renaissance humanist, had it right, and he basically, you know, his attitude was, let the evidence take us where it leads us. It doesn't overturn the scriptures. And he was comfortable with a worldview, a view of the universe that seemed to contradict the scriptures, and he wasn't panicked by this at all. Allowed that form of astronomy to be taught at Wittenberg when the Catholic Church went berserk over Galileo, who comes a little bit later. Yeah. Same idea though; it's the Copernican idea now, actually with hard evidence. That this is true. You know, Copernicus had mathematics; Galileo had hard data.
Right.
And dogmatically it conflicted with the church, so he got in Dutch. Ironically, the Catholic Church today is much more comfortable with science than we are. But I think, you know, we could have a Copernican moment and go back and look at the way that our Lutheran forefathers at our first university at Wittenberg dealt with a challenging scientific thing. Because we have got a good historic record for that. Evolution, not so much. That's a troubling one. It's gonna create problems. But I think we have to engage it,
right?
And same with Big Bang cosmology. Don't be afraid. And just because it has conclusions you don't like, that doesn't mean it's false. It just means it has conclusions you don't like. So just kind of like deal with it.
I look at this and I think I'm just not qualified. I'm a theologian. I'm not a scientist. And it's debatable if I'm a theologian most of the time also.
But yeah, there's active discussion over that point.
But the point is, I think we have too many theologians thinking that they can make scientific statements that they're really not equipped to deal with.
To use your two kingdoms analogy again, this is a very productive analogy. Okay, we would get upset when the state comments on how the church should act or speak. I mean, we go up in arms on that.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't have any problem with the church telling the state how to conduct its business.
Well, that's different.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So when the scientists make these theological or philosophical statements, we get all up in arms. Oh, these atheistic science, you know, evil science, blah, blah, blah. Scientism and blah, blah, blah. But we have no trouble with the church without any confidence commenting on the validity of scientific theory. You know, that's just absurd. It's like this one-way street. What are we, we're omniscient? Just because we have a Bible, now we know about everything. That's crazy.
Well, and I think most Christians would get irritated, especially if a president, you don't agree with him theologically or politically, started making religious statements.
So
I think that we'd be pretty irritated by that because he's not the theologian in chief. He's the commander in chief. You know.
So in this regard, then we have to learn to flag the false argument.
Yeah.
So if somebody says Big Bang, therefore no God, it's like whoa. You know, how do you get from Big Bang to no God? Because God's not a scientific principle or concept. Same way the other way. You know, Bible, therefore no Big Bang. Mm. It's like, really? You know, how do you get from that premise to that conclusion? And I think there's a lot of sort of covert religion in scientific speech, and there's a lot of pseudoscience in religious speech.
Right.
And we have to learn to flag that and clean up the conversation a little bit. And then I think we could have a more constructive conversation, maybe more in line with Melanchthon and the Copernicans. Who knows?
Well, we'll see what comes out in the Lutheran media and what they have to say about you.
Yeah, well, any fodder for the canon, you know. I mean, it's that's how it is.
But, I think you may hear something like this.
I'm not listening to you. You only believe in science. That's probably why we never win.
We never win because you are fat.
There you go.
We never win because you are fat.
That's right. Anyway, we're out of time.
It's been a riot.
Gotta run.